Boys and girls, ladies and gents, welcome to another episode of Clutch Conversations. It's your boy, Mike. We back at you one more again, live on a Thursday night. Hope everybody's feeling good, feeling great. We're going to have a blast on the cast tonight. We got the homie Shelburne from Mershawn's Morphs. We're going to get into the show in just a minute. But first and foremost, shout out to my lovely wife, Takara. Appreciate everything you do, y'all. Make sure y'all show us some love in the comments. And don't just stop there. Make sure you show the channel some love as well. Hit that like button. If you haven't already subscribed, hit that subscribe button. And everybody, make sure you hook, smash that notification bell so you can get notifications each and every time we drop a video here on the channel. Shout out to the audio only gang. Audio recordings of Clutch Conversations are available on all major podcasting platforms. That's Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. When you're checking us out on your favorite podcast platform, please be sure to follow, rate, and review. It really helps us out. We appreciate the feedback, and we appreciate the support. Speaking of support, if you're involved in this reptile hobby in any shape, form, or fashion, make sure you're supporting US Art and US Art Florida. The links for both organizations are in the description of this video. If you're not a member, definitely go grab your membership. If you're able to donate, please donate what you can, and be sure to spread the word about both these organizations that help protect our rights as reptile keepers. So tell a friend, keep it going, spread the word. Speaking of spreading the word, make sure you spread the word about our dope sponsors. We're gonna kick this sponsor video, then we'll be right back to kick it with the chat.
Big dreams start in small towns. Small Town Exotics is a family-run business that specializes in high-quality ball python morphs, western hog noses, and select leopard geckos. They are proud members of US Art, US Art Florida, and the Orient Society. Stay connected with Small Town Exotics on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook. Witness their journey as they grow their business and showcase their animals to the world. Thank you, Small Town Exotics, for sponsoring the show.
Art comes in many forms. At Armies Angels, it comes to life. Yeah, shout out to the sponsors. Appreciate it, Shane. Appreciate it, Justin. Let's see who we got in the chat tonight. Man, Freddie, what's good? More Valley Reptiles in the building. What's good, homie? The homie Bosa in the building. What's good, homie? The Sultan of Support himself. Shout out to the Classic Super Classics. 352 in the building. Brian, what's good? Heathen Hatchery, appreciate you coming out. Appreciate the support, homie. Eric's More Factory, what's good? Appreciate you coming out. Appreciate the support. Bone Daddy Serpents in the building. Yo, 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 what's good? What's up? The homie Rock in the building, what's good, bro? Appreciate you coming out. Appreciate the support. Let's see what else we got. Arvin, Game of Odds, what's good, homie? Appreciate you coming out. Kilburn Reptiles, what's good, homie? Appreciate you coming out. Celtic Reptiles, what's good? Appreciate you coming out. Blakers Pythons in the building, what's good, homie? Appreciate you coming out. Matty Yates, what's good, bro? AZ in the building, appreciate you coming out, homie. The homie Dundotta, what's good? Appreciate you coming out. Frank Locked and Loaded, what's good, homie? Appreciate you coming out. Big Wiz in the building again. Shout out to the Wiz Tang Clan, man. Appreciate you coming out. Appreciate the support. Big Roll 5-0 in the building. Paul Large March Morris. What's good, homie? Hey, that video today was crazy, man. If you haven't been checking out these reels from the 15 minutes of lane contest, man, you're doing yourself an extreme disservice. Go check out the homie Paul. He pulling away a little bit in the contest. So y'all go definitely go check him out. Large March Morris. I think it's Paul, and then it's Troy from Balls and Strikes Pythons that's currently in the lead with the popular vote. But at any rate, definitely go check out what they're doing there on Instagram. It's some dope stuff. Make sure to check that out. We're gonna stop it right there, and we'll be right back.
Won't you listen to me? I got that flavor. I know you're dying to feed. I ain't no dancer. Just got some hip in my feet. Now throw your hands up. Ooh, you bring the lighter. I got the fuse. You make a fire. I'll add the fuel. Follow my lead. Just watch your shoes. Gotta turn the heat up.
Episode 97, Mershon's Morphs. What's good, bro? How you doing?
How are you?
Good, 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 man. Good to have you here.
You too.
Yes, sir. Been looking forward to it all week, brother. So how's your week been going?
Good, man. You know, I mean, this time of year, I travel quite a bit, you know, to get out of the weather a little bit in Ohio. So I'm out here actually currently at my wife's house, my wife's parents' home in Arizona. I literally just got off the golf course literally an hour ago, rushed home, grabbed my computer, and here we go, you know. So it's all good.
Yeah, busy man. Are you do you golf a lot, or are you a pretty good golfer? What are your thoughts?
You know, so like personally myself, honestly, I'm horrible. I started maybe 3 years ago now.
Okay.
I've raced my whole career of my life. You know, I mean, growing up in the car industry and stuff. So I raced professionally as a very large scale, you know, with IndyCar and the American Le Mans Series and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I did it at a very professional level with racing in general. So golf was something that I took up, like I said, a few years back. And I really like it. And so I'm lucky enough to where my father and my wife's parents live out in Arizona, where it's nice, you know, in the wintertime.
Nice. Yeah, definitely a lot different weather than Ohio for sure.
It is, you know, I mean, it's changed a little bit, you know. I mean, it's funny how the years have changed that way, that back home, you know, I mean, we'll get a dusting of snow and the next day it's 50 degrees, you know. I mean, it's we don't get the winter as we used to.
Gotcha. So I didn't know you used to race. How long ago was that, and how did you get into it?
I've done racing my whole life until I was from 12 until 21-ish, 22, you know. And I did quarter midgets, and then I got into Indy cars, where I was actually doing the Indy Light Series for years, you know. And then got into open wheel, obviously with the Indy Light stuff, and then got into IMSA at the time, was called IMSA. Now it's called the Grand Am Rolex Series. No, I did, you know, the whole Porsche thing and you know, I mean, all that kind of stuff. And that's it's probably a little common interest of where I help Justin at.
Nice. Yeah, that's pretty cool, man. I definitely didn't know that. I don't think I know anyone that used to race cars, like, personally. So that's pretty cool for sure.
Yeah, we do that. And then, you know, breed snakes, talk cars, snakes, and cars.
Nice.
Literally, that's my life.
And like, I know you got like a lot of different like high-end cars and stuff like that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do. Yeah.
So what all you got?
Man, we've been in the business for 45 years, of the car dealership. So, I mean, we primarily mess with your wants in the Corvette industry, so you're like your 56 to 62 Corvettes, your 63 through 67 Corvettes, your 69 to 72 Corvettes, we do some late model stuff and play with some other, other makes, Chevelles, Camaros, anything in the old classic car industry is primarily was the cup of tea for the dealership.
Okay. Gotcha. So you grew up around that. It was just like second nature to you.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, we've got a little bit of everything, Ferraris, Lambos, and you name it. I've driven it, or I would be shocked if you could name a car I haven't driven.
So as far as the racing, yeah, that just floors me. That's pretty cool. So what was one of your more crazier experiences on your racing career?
Yeah, I mean, probably the biggest thing was when I ran in the IMSA series. I was a senior in high school. Actually, I was a second year of junior year of when I started in the IMSA series and ran for a team out of Georgia. And then that's all I did. I just drove the car, just a second, another wheel on the team. I ran all the series, Tours of Sebring to, rode Atlanta to Petit Le Mans. I've been to Le Mans, and watched it. I've never physically raced it, but I've done, Watkins Glen, Mid-Ohio. I mean, all the whole pro circuit, I've done the whole entire the racing thing that way.
Gotcha.
I don't know. I mean, I would say that was probably one of the biggest changes of the driving career. I mean, that's where it became a point to where I could have done it full time. I felt, and I was right there. And then, I ended up having kids, started a family and everything, early on. So that kind of changed that side, and then I remarried here about a year ago now. And then, I've been in Arizona for a long, long, long time, back and forth. And she's always been from out here. And now I'm more of an Arizona guy than anything.
Nice. Do you ever miss racing?
I do. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I do a lot of track days, Justin, which is always fun. The problem I have is I don't have a shutoff. When you get in that atmosphere of what you are used to in the pro side of things, it's a whole nother mentality. And you go to these track days and these guys are just going out to have fun. I'm going out to break freaking records, trying to push the limits, set times, I've got to be at the top. I've got to be at the top. I can't be, beyond that. And that's just doing it for so long, so I don't do it, anymore to that level. The track day thing's been, is a lot of fun. I really enjoy it a lot. And I'll continue to do that. That's one thing that, I enjoy, I've never been in my racing career. I've never taken like a street car and put it on a road course. I've always taken a race car, and put it on a road course, or track. So it's huge difference. It's where the manufacturers began to kind of develop a vehicle, in general of taking a regular street car to a road course versus we had a developed vehicle, way more, than what they offer, obviously, at times.
You ever had anything like go really wrong during the race? Like had a flat tire, like sped off the track or something?
Man,
like
I've taken three corners off a car. bust a wishbone, you know, or a suspension point, you know, going up, like hiking the curbs too high, you know, and an open wheel and breaking a suspension point. And I mean, all you do, you just cross your arms and just, you never take a hold of the steering wheel. I mean, it's out of your control at that point, you know, because the grass is like ice, you know? So, I mean, once you get on that stuff, it's slick as snot. I mean, you're going to hit a wall. You just take the impact and brace for it. You know, I've taken three corners off a car, you know, I mean, I'm not going to say I haven't, in racing in general, in your career of any of that kind of stuff, you're going to, you know, blow motors, you're going to blow tires, you're going to have, you know, crappy pit stops, you know, whatever the case may be. But no, I mean, I've been through it, you know, luckily enough, and fortunately, you know, I haven't had any broken bones or any bad injuries, you know, along the way. But no, it's a thrill, you know, it's a ride.
What's going through your head? Like when you hit the grass and you know you're gonna have like impact, what's going through your head?
When I was early on and I had children, you know, I've got a son, Giovanni, he'll be 14 here in January. I've got a daughter that'll be 12, Aubriana. And then I've got a little boy that is a little over one, Giovanni, Sterling. And then I've got a little girl that's two, Joy. And I mean, at the time that I did that stuff, I didn't have the two younger ones, you know, so I've got a pretty little bit of a gap. You can't let that stuff go through your head when you're driving, you know, it's a mental thing, just like golf or anything else, you know, so you just got to literally, like, you put on a helmet and it's like, it just, you know, I mean, I got to such a state of mind to where it changed things, you know, I mean, I didn't think about anything else, you know, but driving fast, you know, and now, you know, I mean, people ask, you know, what were you thinking? You know, like what was going through your head before you did that? Did that hold you back or anything like that? I didn't have any of that. You know, I just, it's what I did. You know, I mean, I just drove the wheels off a car and put it to the limit as much as I felt that I could do myself. No, I didn't have too much restrictions. I felt that way. You know, I mean, it was just a mental thing, you know, and you got to commit. That's the biggest thing. You know, I mean, you really have to commit, you know, and doing 160 through a corner versus doing, you know, 60 through a corner. You just got to commit, you know, I mean, the chances are always there. And I mean, you just rock and roll.
Nice, nice. Sounds like it's just like anything else. Obviously, like different specifics, but as far as like the whole mental aspect of it, you just got to, like, it's a mind thing.
It was big. You know, I mean, it's a mental game, you know, I mean, it's committing to anything, you know, I mean, you got to trust the car, there's a lot of things that go through your head, you know, I mean, doing those kinds of numbers, you know, speed wise and stuff, but it kind of comes normal, you know, after a while, you know, I mean, the numbers don't play as much in your mind as the how things work.
Nice, nice. And so you said you're pursuing records and stuff like that. Did you set any like records or anything like that?
I did early on in my life. I did, you know, in the quarter midget thing, I did, you know, I still have, you know, track records, you know, until this day of, you know, doing that stuff. But in the Indy Lights and things, anything along those lines, I didn't have anything that way, you know, but it was a fun experience.
Nice, nice, nice. Yeah, that's pretty cool, man. I didn't know that. So that's pretty cool to learn about that. So I guess moving on, let's talk about snakes a little bit. So how's your season going right now?
You know, I mean, it started off early. So I moved in the new facility and I was able to start a lot earlier than last year. I moved in literally December. I think I looked it up. It was like 19th or something like that. So I've been in there a year now. So last year I didn't breed heavy at all. I started really late. I got very small, smallest year I've ever had, which was fine. you know, being with the way things are, you know, the market and et cetera, that I was okay to acclimate to the new place, as well as animals have kind of adjusted to it too, you know? So I was able to start early, months early, to where, I mean, I've already got, I mean, I'll have eggs on the ground within a week or two from now, you know, for 24. So, and several, you know, at the, I mean, things are starting to flow in, you know, so it'll be a good year this year, because everything's kind of in its parameters and I literally moved them from one side of the property to the next. I didn't move them far. It's just, it's a lot. It's new, you know, I mean, it's sealed up, it's tight, you know, I mean, it's fresh.
Did your girls get some good weight on them? Taking off.
Yeah. And that's another thing, you know, I mean, I didn't have to push stuff hard, you know, on getting weight on things. Cause they had all last year, you know, I mean, I was hitting things last year all the way through. So, I mean, when I came into the season to where, you know, breeding time came, it wasn't as bad, you know, I didn't have to push things as hard, you know, on feed. Once you start, you know, girls developing follicles and stuff, you know, I mean, obviously you see them, you know, starting being hungry monsters or whatever you want to say, you know, I mean, things kind of take off, you know, a little more, but no, it's kind of things that just kind of rolled and flowed through.
Nice. Nice. And so you said that, you had a small year last year, mm-hmm. your smallest year. So what's small for you?
Yeah, it's funny. So typically I do 30 a year.
Okay.
You know, and I do 30, like, you know, obviously solid stuff. You know, I try to do the best that I can. You know, this year was only 8. You know, so very, I mean, it was less than 1/3, you know, what I typically do. But I'm not disappointed at all, you know, with not being heavy, you know, on having a bunch of babies to move right now either.
Was it like your top 8 or somewhere close to it?
I'd say it was about 50-50. Okay. You know, it was kind of one of them years, you know, I mean, I had some cool lavender stuff, you know, one lavender clutch that was pretty unique. You know, I mean, clown stuff, of course, you know, this was the first year to make clown pied combos for me, period. You know, so that was kind of fun. Nice. But other than that, you know, I mean, it wasn't the year prior, you know, I mean, last year, you know, I mean, the year previous was pretty interesting and really fun. But it makes it more fun for this season. So
nice.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of different puzzle pieces moving at this moment. So it'll be a much better year than last year.
Nice. I unexpectedly hit some clown pie combos this year.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Like I had a male that I didn't know he was het for pie. Like he was a DG leopard, yellow belly, yinchi, het clown. And I put him to clown pie hoping to hit like some visual clowns that were double hit and then hit 3 clown pie combos. So I was super stoked about that.
Yeah.
I definitely wasn't expecting that. It was a great surprise too. It was actually that same weekend that I met you at Justin's. Like we came back home and they had pipped, and then I cut the rest and cut like the third egg or something like that. And it was like a clown pie combo, which was like, I was like, that's crazy. And so like, I cut the rest because it was like 8 eggs total.
Couldn't help it. Yeah.
3 of them ended up being clown pies. So I was like, oh man, this is nuts.
All hit DG. Yeah, that's good. And that's the thing. I mean, it takes a couple years of some really solid things like that to happen in anybody's collection. And it really changes things.
Yeah, that was definitely a pleasant surprise. I think my next 2 clutches after that, like it evened out as far as like the odds got, because I went on like 10 males low genetics in a row. It was like I just couldn't hit anything after that. So yeah, it's crazy. You get highs, you get lows. It's just how it goes.
It's like playing the lottery.
Oh yeah, it's thrilling for sure. So I want to talk a little bit about the facility. So you say you've been in about a year. Talk about like the planning process and what went into kind of like designing the layout and kind of like how your mindset was at that time?
So I've been fortunate. I would say this is, I don't even know, fourth or fifth place that I've done now. And, you know, I mean, you make changes along the way at each facility. I was really lucky, and, you know, I mean, obviously Justin and I became really good friends and helped him move into his place, that I took a lot of pictures and stuff of more of that than anything. You know, I mean, everybody asks, you know, I mean, he's got all the, you know, I mean, you've been there, you know, you see it. I mean, everybody's got mindful things of certain things that's going on, which there's really nothing different, you know, besides his animals are just very advanced, that, you know, I was able to go through and picture this and that and where to, you know, I mean, and I kind of just duplicated it, you know, I mean, I really did. I kind of changed things. You know, what I would have done personally different. You know, I mean, I'm very OCD. So like stainless beyond the sinks doesn't have nails going through it or anything. It's just a solid sheet. You know, I mean, I glued it to the wall. So it's just perfect. There's no dents, no nothing, you know? You know, I mean, one thing he mentioned is I never put an incubator on an exterior wall, and obviously I didn't. You know, I put my T wall in kind of the center of the room, and then did hatchings on one side and breeders on one side, and kind of divided things that way, and was able to put the incubator on an interior of the T wall, and you know, make it to where it fixed that issue, you know, or I don't even say there's no issue, you know, of having it on an exterior or interior, but it was something that I was able to do, right? You know, the layout of having displays and cages in general, you know, I mean, all the racks and put two here, one here, and three rail racks here, and I got 18, you know, this and that, and just all the numbers, you know, I mean, I literally drew the whole thing up, you know, I started on a clean sheet of paper, you know, so I didn't have anything, you know, really restricting me from a certain dimension to an extent, that I was able to kind of go a little beyond, you know, put cars in front and do the snake facility in the back of it. And it literally, I mean, from an exterior side of things, I mean, it matches the house. It looks like I've got six garage doors on the house versus a storefront a little bit more. You know, so I just changed the dynamics a little bit of what I wanted to what it fit me personally.
Gotcha. So what was the most challenging aspect of kind of like going through that whole design and build phase?
I mean, I didn't have too many challenges along the way. You know, I mean, everything was pretty dialed in. It was just a matter of keeping everything kind of pushed along, like getting in by a certain point, you know, and keeping up on everybody to, you know, the contractors and stuff of drywall and insulation and, you know, I mean, HVAC and everything else getting installed, you know, it's probably the biggest stress of building the whole place, honestly.
Did any of your costs kind of go up from the initial projection?
Yeah, I mean, I built last year, you know, I mean, well, a little over, I mean, I started a year and a half, 2 years, I guess, at this point, you know, ago, to where prices were different. You know, I mean, lumber was different. Concrete stayed the same, if not more, you know, so that hasn't changed much. If I had to duplicate the building today, would cost be much different than where I'm at now? Probably not. So I wouldn't change anything. Is there some things I would add? I guess. Yeah, I would. And really it'd be a bathroom, if anything, you know, to the whole building. You know, beyond that, I mean, it, the thing is, it's so close to the house, it's maybe 10 steps that I just never put that in my mind, you know, realistically to amount to much. I didn't think I was going to have 50 to 100 visitors and stuff like that at a time, you know, to where having a bathroom publicly to an extent, made sense. But I mean, I do. I have a lot of people over, and you know, I mean, there's been quite a few things, obviously, you know, facility tours and you know, the whole bit that I probably should have. That would be my biggest thing I'd change.
Gotcha. So are you doing a ton of facility tours?
Not much. You know, I mean, it's pretty small. You know, I mean, I don't shut anybody out or anything that way. You know, it's just more of you know, if people ask, you know, I mean, you're more than welcome to come over, you know, and view the place.
Nice. And so everything's all settled in now. Season's gearing up for you. All that's looking good. And you say you're probably doing about 30 clutches this year too?
Oh, no. We'll do some more than that.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll be somewhere between 35 to 50.
35 to 50. You know? Okay.
Yeah. We'll jump it up a lot more this season.
And so is this year for you more of a kind of like build some foundations for some projects you're working on, or is this more of kind of like advance and stuff? Like, where are you at with all that?
Yeah. I mean, I always work on myself more than anything else. You know, I mean, all the byproduct comes along with what you do and what you breed. So I just kind of focus more on my own self of making things for the future to work with versus is, you know, what's hot right now or anything that way.
Gotcha. And so like, what are your kind of your, like your marquee projects? I know Clown is like a base for a lot of what you're doing, but what else are you working into that?
Yeah, I mean, so I mean, I've obviously the Xanthic thing's been, you know, I was lucky to, you know, get in on that early on. So the Xanthic Clown project's been a strong thing, you know, the double recessives for me. You know, DG Clown stuff, you know, I mean, I have it, I work with it. I wish I was a little further along on certain things at this point with it, but you know, I kind of skipped a step and you know, was fortunate enough to get a DG Clown head Xanthic male to run to some Xanthic combo stuff and Xanthic Clown combos and, you know, the whole bit that way. So it kind of, I went backwards on making combos of certain things, but then at the same time, I went forward on others, you know?
Gotcha. And so what projects are you focusing on really heavily this year? Is there one that you're kind of putting more focus on this year, or is it?
Yeah, I mean, the Xanthic Clown combo stuff, you know, I mean, that's always been my niche market, you know, I mean, and I feel like I've always done well with it. So I'll probably continue on with making some cool stuff that way. But really, I mean, the whole Xanthic DG Clown, you know, and working combos along that direction, more length of, you know, I mean, distance wise is more where my head's at.
Gotcha. What codoms are you working into that, Xanthic Clown stuff or the Xanthic DG Clown?
Yeah, I mean, primarily more pattern stuff than colors. You know, I mean, there's not a lot of colors you can, I feel, play with, you know, I mean, that work on that project as much. So, you know, doing leopard and spot nose and hurricane and, you know, I mean, all your common, you know, I mean, big number genes that are pattern wars is the obvious, you know, I feel like it with that project.
You got like asset working in it or confusion?
Yeah, I've got that too. You know, I mean, it's the same way. It's another project, you know, I mean, in the aspect of having, you know, a pattern disruption, you know, genetic, you know, along the whole thing. So having, you know, confusion in the stuff, acid, static, you know, whatever you want to say, you know, I mean, is definitely another gene that works, I think, in the Xanthic Clown, DG Clown, or anything along those lines.
You feel like acid, static, and confusion are all the same?
I feel like they're very much the same.
Gotcha. So what would you say your flagship animal in that project is?
Probably that DG Clown head Xanthic, you know, okay. That male. I mean, he can do a lot, you know, and that whole, your byproduct, you know, I mean, is Xanthic Clown combos, head DG, you know, I mean, so, I mean, you're starting out with some pretty solid stuff. You know, I mean, DG Clown combos, head Xanthic, I mean, that's obviously not the male to use, you know, so, I mean, I've got a spot nose DG Clown and other things too, you know, along that line, but no, I'm pretty specific, that's one thing I'm very specific on is I would try to make things pretty solid. You know, there's not a guessing game as much.
Gotcha. That makes sense. That makes sense. You working any hypo?
That's probably one gene that, you know, I wish I probably would have got in on earlier on. I had it way back when I was into it the first time. But the second go around, I haven't had any hypo stuff and don't really, I mean, honestly, I don't focus on it at all. You know, I mean, I like it. I just feel at this point, you know, like the hypo DG and some of the combos at this point are so far stretched that, you know, with hypo and DG or hypo and whatever, that it would be really hard. You know, I mean, I guess I kind of set that one out, period.
You mean like hard to like jump in at a level that you feel like makes sense for your collection now?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. At this point, yeah, yeah.
Gotcha. What other recesses are you working?
Probably the biggest one, you know, I mean, I've got some Sunset stuff. Xanthic DG Clown, Sunset, Monsoon a little bit.
Okay, nice, nice. You want to put the Xanthic DG stuff with the Monsoon?
I think that's definitely, it would be, the biggest thing is your byproduct and a variation of that whole quad would be so good. You know, I mean, DG Monsoon's a given, Xanthic Monsoon's a given, you know, I mean, the Clown Monsoon stuff we've seen some of, you know, so I mean, there's a lot of long leg in that project, I feel.
Do you feel like there's anything out there that can disrupt the Monsoon pattern some? You think there's anything out there?
It's changed with certain genes, but it's kind of what I predicted, I feel, so far. You know, I mean, not much has changed to an extent.
What gene has kind of broken it up some or changed it some?
I mean, Spotnose has definitely done some good stuff, like it has in a lot of things, you know, over the years. I mean, Yellow Belly, I think Leopard and Sunset, you know, I mean, obviously don't work. You know, I mean, the Monsoon thing, you know, I mean, it's, we've seen so much special in Mojave and Pastel and stuff with Monsoon that we haven't seen many other things along the lines of with Monsoon so far yet to make it knowing of what really works the most.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I definitely want to see like what's to be done with that project. Like, it's a project that I like, but I don't see myself investing in it anytime soon. Not because like I don't like see a future for it, but obviously like I'm trying to stay at like a specific size for right now. And right. So I don't want to like get too spread thin in my projects. I do want to kind of focus. And so I've got like a subset of projects that I'm working on, and I'm just trying to go hard in those projects. So along those lines, like, what are your thoughts on like diversification versus specialization?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of, I'm pretty narrow-minded to an extent. So I really always try to focus on things that work best for me. I think there's a variation, you know, of what's hot and what's not as strong, you know, to today's market. I think DG's probably cooled off a little bit compared to what it was at for a little bit. You know, I mean, is Clown a new puzzle and that whole thing? I don't know. I mean, I guess we'll all find that out, right?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think Puzzle's a great gene. You know, I was into it, you know, early on and kind of sold out, you know, a little maybe to where I shouldn't have, you know. I mean, it's something that I still feel is it's cool. You know, I mean, I do like the project. So I don't know if there's a right or wrong answer for that, Mike, honestly. You know, I mean, that's tough. You know, I mean, it goes back to the kind of the ground floor of what keeps your interest and what makes you excited.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And so you mentioned earlier, when you were in the first time, so you've been doing it like what, twice When did you get?
Yeah, so I was into it back in 07, 08, in that area, back into 13, got out in 13, got back in 16.
Okay.
I bought a new house that I was had a separate building, you know, the whole bit before, and the new place wasn't capable of having that yet, you know, with out building a new place and the whole bit, and you know, kids were coming and much younger, and so I set it out for a little while, you know. So when I got back in at 16, it was fun, it was cool.
Gotcha. And how has your project building mindset kind of changed over time?
More's not everything. You know, having a lot of animals is not always the answer. I think let's face it, it's real. It's like anything you get in. I don't care if it's real estate, cars, or anything. The more money you have, the difference. You know, so if you can invest a ton, you know, at the beginning on a bunch of high-end stuff, you're going to be projected for a lot longer. If you keep it, if you breed and push, you know, if you don't do it as much and it's more of a hobbyist side of things, it's just really what your checkbook allows. You know, I mean, if you can have a $100,000 collection, you know, some really good stuff and have 40 snakes that really do very well, you can have a couple hundred animals and still do extremely well. I mean, there's several guys I feel in this industry that they're starting to see that too, you know, at this point, you know, where numbers aren't everything. You know, I mean, it's a unique market. It's exquisite now more than it ever has been. It's more refined, you know, to where some of the basics aren't basics anymore, if that makes sense. You know, so having some of the distance items, you know, shelf items, you know, et cetera, you know, of girls, you know, I mean, is never a bad thing. It's just a matter of, you just kind of got to set a perimeter. You know, I'm kind of, you know, I grew into the new facility and had a ton of animals, and I'm kind of like, I don't want to say consolidating a little bit, but I'm kind of, I call it thinning some of the fat. You know, I mean, some of the stuff that it's like, that's just another clutch. You know, it doesn't really, yeah, it's a numbers game. I get it. But you're just making stuff to be making animals at that point. You know, yeah, it's good stuff, I feel. But there's a lot of people making good stuff, you know, at this point. So why remake some of that, you know? So, I mean, to me, I thin out some of that and try to stay a lot more consolidated, to where I don't have 300 or 500 or whatever, you know, rodents to feed a week and all that kind of stuff. You know, I try to keep it lean and mean, you know, I mean, I try to keep the collection, you know, I mean, if I'm not going to use it, then it's going to be sold. You know, I mean, at that point, you know, I mean, there's no reason to keep it around, you know, whether it's a breeder girl or a breeder male. I mean, I've raised males up that are breeder size, and there's a few that are probably listed right now at this moment that I've never even introduced to a girl. I put it on the shelf at the time because I thought it was smart, and now it's like, I really don't need it, you know? So
gotcha.
Kind of building along and kind of, you know, keeping the collection lean, you know?
So how big is your collection right now?
Well, there's like 250, 300.
250, 300?
Okay. Yeah, it's not huge. You know, I mean, everybody thinks it's very large. I feel everybody has that persona, you know, I mean, of, man, you've got tons of animals. Like, I really don't, you know, I mean, I just keep it really, really lean and mean, you know, I mean, I try to just kind of stay consolidated and not the biggest thing you can do is hurt yourself by growing too fast, you know? And I mean, I grew steadily, you know, over the years, but I mean, I kind of feel like at this point now, you know, with kids and you know, time and this, and I kind of juggle a lot of things, you know, in general, you know, with cars and still, you know, I mean, I don't do it full time anymore. It's been a year that I've been out of the dealership since December. So I don't do the family business anymore. I do the snake thing full time. At the same time, I mean, I still do some car stuff a little bit too, you know, but I don't do the day to day.
Gotcha. Is it just you with the snakes?
Yeah. It's easier that way. You know, I mean, at the size of the collection and stuff, you have more hands on, you know, your animals better. Is it nice to have help? Of course. You know, I mean, cleaning, you know, I mean, that's one thing, you know, I mean, I had a guy for 4 months, you know, when I moved into the new place, and he did a great job. It just, times got slow and you know, I mean, I didn't produce a lot last year either. So I don't have a lot of product to offer, you know, I mean, I wish I did. But I'm still selling product off this season right now that, you know, I mean, here in another less than 30 days, I'll have eggs for 24.
Speaking of sales, like, have you done like any kind of sales or anything like to boost sales just in general? What's been your strategy in that space?
Yeah, not much. You know, I mean, I price things at what I would pay for it. You know, I mean, I really do. I mean, I try to, you know, I mean, hey, that animal catches my eye. All that would work into my projects. You know, that's not a bad price. I'd pay that, you know? I try to do a little bit of that a lot, of not getting too cutthroat, you know, and kind of putting things out there of what I feel they should bring myself, you know, with the adjustment, of course, and go from there. I mean, some stuff sits for 30 days, some stuff sits, you know, longer than that. So, I mean, it just depends. You know, but I'm not a race to the bottom type of a person either. You know, I don't need to sell, you know, something right away to, you know, a $3,000 animal and someone offers you $1,500. Sorry, I'm just not that guy. You know, I mean, I know, you know, I mean, maybe $3,250, you know, I mean, I'll come back to you at that. You know, I mean, that's my negotiation side. You know, I mean, I don't get in too involved in the numbers of racing. Well, there's a Hurricane Clown for $800 on the market. Well, that's, you know, add a couple of genes to it, and I guess you figure out what you feel it's worth personally. But I mean, this is what I'll take for it, you know. So that's been nice, you know, to where I just kind of consistently, steadily flow. I mean, no, I'm not going to use that female this year and go ahead and list her and you know, things along those lines, I guess, more or less, you know, I mean, I stay really consolidated. I really do.
Do you get people that offer you like 50% of the listed price a lot?
No.
Okay.
I really don't. No, I mean, I really don't. I mean, respect to the industry in general, period. I don't get that kind of stuff too often. You know, have I? Of course. But does it come in consistently? No. I mean, it's most of the time it's, hey man, you know, would you work with me and do a payment plan on this? And you know, I mean, it's things along those lines more than anything. It's not well, Joe will sell it for this, you know, why you match that price, you know, that type of a thing. I don't get that, you know, nor would I take to it to begin with anyway.
Gotcha. The weirdest thing that I've had happen, and somebody I think on the show told me this happened to them before, and it kind of floored me at the time, but like now it's happened to me, where someone would reach out, they would make an offer on a snake, make a reasonable offer, you would accept it, and then they would just ghost you.
Yep. I've had people literally, I've had one customer in particular buy the same animal at least twice.
Wait, what? You
know, I mean, they'll buy it at least twice. I mean, they'll literally the same
animal, like deposit or?
The whole bit and then back up. And then days later, hey, I'm interested in that. You know, I mean, is that still available? It's like, yeah. Nothing's changed. And they, all right, well, I'm going to send a deposit. Nothing happens. You know, so I think that's just an anything. You know, I don't care if you're dealing in cars or real estate or whatever. You know, I mean, that's just part of the game. That's just how anything works. You know, I mean, you're going to get those people that you caught at the right time that were in the moment and now they're not in the moment, you know, when that has to come through or follow through. So it's just part of it, you know, but I don't mark anything sold until it's paid for. You know,
you said bought the same animal twice. I wasn't quite following you until you like told the story, but I thought like they sent you money or sent you a deposit. Let the deposit.
No, I mean, literally, I mean, it was to a point to where we agreed to a price and I'll send you a deposit tomorrow and sorry, something came up and can't send you it. And then 2 weeks later, hey, is that animal still available? I'll go ahead and take it and I'll send you a deposit and nothing ever happens. And you don't hear anything else. Yeah.
Got you. Got you. Ghost. And we're going to sponsor video real quick and then we'll be right back.
Cool.
All right.
Peace and love, family. We invite you into the heart of our serenity, Ancestral Royal Pythons. At Ancestral Royal Pythons, we're not just breeders, we're nurturers of love and growth. Each of our high-end ball pythons is a tribute to the grandeur of the natural world and our dedication to quality. Reach out today and bring one of our creations into your home. This is Ancestral Royal Pythons. Your journey begins here.
Here's to the exciting world of ebony and ivory reptiles. From unforgettable parties and events to keeping and hatching some of the dopest reptiles in the reptile hobby, we're all about education, quality, integrity, and respect. Hit us up and see how we can help make your next project a reality. Experience Ebony and Ivory Reptiles, where fascination meets fun.
Ebony and Ivory Reptiles.
Appreciate the sponsors. So you kind of already answered this, or at least some of this, but one of the questions I wanted to ask you is about like advice for a new breeder. And I realize that's kind of like circumstance dependent. So sure. I'll tee up like some circumstances for you and we can just go from there. So yeah, if someone comes up to you, they're like, hey, Shelby, I got 100K to invest in ball pythons. I really want to start breeding. I've been keeping ball pythons for a while. I've got my husbandry dialed in, but I really want to kind of like dive into the breeding aspect of things. Space is really not a limitation. What's your advice on how I best build out my collection?
I think with that, you know, I mean, personally, I'd always buy hatchlings to begin with. I'd always buy girls. You know, your first couple years, you know, I maybe take 75 of the 100, you know, and buy girls, you know, but make sure they're all connected to an extent, you know, I mean, make sure all the Legos add up, you know, I mean, and what I mean by that is, you know, if you're very big on Exantic, you're going to have Exantic clowns, you're going to have Exantic VGs, you might try to have Exantic puzzles, you might, you know what I mean, Exantic pides, you're going to have, you know, build some of your ground floor off of one recessive with, at this point, another recessive, you know, and invest, you know, I mean, yeah, you might only end up with five animals out of that 100,000, you know, I mean, that's the truth. I mean, depending on how far you want to go, you know, I mean, you could, I mean, as you know, I mean, you could literally, we could spend 100K on five snakes real easy. With that being said, you know, I mean, is that the right attack? Maybe not. You know, I mean, I feel that if you don't want to press the envelope as much, you know, I mean, you can do more in quantity, you know, so you dial it back a little bit, you know, I mean, you get some really good females, you still raise them up the whole bit. The biggest thing is your ground floor. It's like laying concrete and building a house. You know, I mean, you lay concrete, you buy really high end stuff, right? You make a really solid foundation. Those girls you'll have for years. Stuff that you you want to go the cheaper way out, you know, and not maybe invest as heavy on the females and go more on the male side. The thing is you rotate your males out a lot. Girls, if you buy them, you're buying stuff. You should typically produce your females to hold back and buy your males. That's really the key. But at the end of the day, starting from scratch, you need to buy girls and buy the most expensive females of the best genetics you can buy and build from there.
Gotcha. So is that advice, like, have you always followed that advice? Like, or did you kind of like learn by like trial and error at some point?
Yeah, I mean, it's something when I got back in 16, I mean, I was smart enough and sophisticated enough that I knew a lot of people from the first time in. So it was like coming back and reconnecting, you know, with, I mean, Mark Bailey and Ozzy. I mean, all those guys. I knew all those guys way back before the first, you know, the first time I was into it. So I had a lot of good connections. It was fun to see a lot of people, you know, what brings you back? Oh, my God, you're back in this industry. You know, I mean, the whole bit, it was fun, right? And I went to Tinley in October in 16 and went crazy. And I mean, there's still a few of those females, even in 16, that I've raised up as hatchlings when I bought them in 16 that I still have today, they really just, they're not really going out of style.
What'd you pick up in 16 that you're still like breeding?
Probably the only thing, I mean, I've got a pastel spot-nosed yellow-belly clown female that came from Ben Rennick. You know, in 16, you know, and I mean, I won't sell that animal just because I knew Ben from then and remember talking to him before all the stuff, you know, that all happened. You know, I mean, I still have a fire leopard clown visual girl from Justin, you know, at this point that is probably outdated really, but it's really hard to get rid of certain things at times. And that's another thing about slimming down, you know, and trying to keep the collection thin, because you get to a point to where you're established in your collection so far to where you're investing in males more than obviously where the transition changes, you know, of you've got your females, right? And you're now big on males, you know, and you're capable of always buying heavy males. So you start buying those males and then you get into, it's easy to make some of the smaller items you feel that aren't as valuable to your collection, still valuable because you have those heavy males. So it's hard to consolidate. You know, it's like, oh, I can run that one male to that girl. And it's like, yeah, I'll be making fire leopard sunsets or fire leopard clown's head sunset or whatever, you know, I mean, so it's like kind of hard to sell some of those breeder females that are like plug and plays, you know, but you kind of got to, I mean, to me, it's like, all right, I can do it. You know, I can do these five pairings with that one male. I can do, where I get spot-nosed clown combos. I can do this. You know, I mean, I can get several different genetics, you know, spot-nosed yellow belly, fire, leopard, hurricane, whatever. I mean, you name it, you know, damn near, and clown head this or head that, right? So why have some of the other stuff, you know, at this point, you've got other things along, you know, why make fire leopard clown combos head exanthic when you've got fire leopard clowns head exanthic breeder female sitting there?
That makes sense. That makes
a ton of sense. So like, I try to like always just, you know, it's like, I really am not going to use that. Like, I mean, I can't literally throw even out of the most expensive males or whatever, the most unique males of the whole collection of running them through that female, you know, from a genetic side of things, you know, through your head, it's like none of them really trigger me to where I want to like do that, you know? So I'll sell it.
Gotcha. And so you talked about some of the relationships you had with people when you came back into the game. And so obviously you value like building good relationships. So talk about some of those relationships that you've built it over the past, that you've built over the past, and like why that's important to you.
You know, I mean, relationships in this industry are huge. You know, I mean, the first time I was into it, you know, is when I met Ozzy. You know, I met Mark Bailey then. You know, I mean, there's several big names, you know, that your face, you know, I met Ozzy at Hamburg in like 08 or something like that, you know, and it was always like an achievement, I felt, to buy an animal at that point, you know, from some of those guys, right? To where when I got back in 16, it was nice because I literally went to Tinley and everybody's there. You know, I mean, Levance and I mean, you name it, like the whole bit. Justin and I didn't know each other at all, period. I bought animals in 16 from him. And then, you know, in 18, we started doing some other stuff a little bit in the car business and kind of getting that whole thing going. And one thing led to another. And now it's, you know, I mean, we do a lot of car stuff, obviously, and I do a lot of snake stuff with him. But, you know, so that was a relationship that was built later in today. But early on, I kind of taught myself a lot. You know, I just knew when I got back in that those females and recessives and you know, and build building blocks, you know. So, I mean, I made a lot of friends, you know, again. And then, you know, hey, I'm getting back in. You know, I really want to, you know, I mean, girls only, you know, I'm starting a collection. And you know, obviously you buy numbers and you get a better price, you know. So I was trying to put deals together and try to really, you know, put my feet back on the ground a little bit. So it worked out, you know. I mean, I can't complain. And I've taken chance, you know, I've taken a risk, you know, a little bit, you know, on buying certain things of important and anything, you know, early on. But it's everything's worked very well. You know, I don't have any second thoughts on that.
Gotcha. Yeah, building relationships is extremely important. I mean, not just in this industry, not just in industries in general, but just in life in general. I think that's really important. Like, I can't count the number of times that I've had to like lean on my network for getting some information that I need or like helping me out with something. And then mm-hmm. vice versa too, folks will come to me for stuff. And so like, I feel like relationships is all about that, like kind of like give and take, to where it's like mutually beneficial for all the parties involved. So definitely important to build those relationships. And like they always say, your network is your net worth.
It's true. You know, I mean, it's the more people you're connected with, you know, I mean, the more variation you have, you know, of on the market and you know, I mean, your name being said, you know, I mean, word of mouth is huge. You know, I mean, I think that's as big as anything anymore. You know, I mean, obviously advertising and certain things have changed over the years of how to promote yourself. But I think that's one thing I know I can do better at. But at the same time, I just kind of go with the flow.
True. So I want to get your takes on kind of like where the market is going, some projections for the industry. So going into 2024, what would you say are some of the hottest projects to be working right now?
I think the Xantic Desert Ghost stuff is probably one of the hotter projects. Puzzle's definitely coming on heavy, you know. So I mean, some puzzle stuff along that way, you know, I mean, a puzzle Xantic DG, you know, I mean, some of that kind of stuff, I think, you know, I mean, those are our future items, you know, 100%. I mean, other than that, there's nothing else I feel recessive wise that's popping at this moment that's released. Okay. You know, I mean, that when I say that, you know what I mean, you know, obviously Tornado and this and that, you know, I mean,
right.
Some of that stuff, you know, I mean, as it came to surface, you know, from a availability standpoint. So, you know, but from where we're at this point, I feel like those are probably the some of the stronger recessives, you know, and triples and things that people would be working with and what's hot to the market, you know.
Gotcha. So one of the follow-up question that I wanted to ask you was about like a project that has like a lot of potential coming up. Do you think Tornado is one of those projects?
You got Cosmos, you got Tornado. You know, I think it's a personal opinion, like any of the stuff is, you know, what might be stronger to the market and what might not be. I think Tornado is really cool. I think Cosmos is really cool. I guess it just depends on, you know, what's released and what's available first. You know, I think they'll both have their time, you know, I mean, just like everything does. So, I mean, I think Tornado is probably my first choice personally, from what I've seen, but, I mean, that doesn't change that something else might be greater or something come along between then.
Gotcha. So what are some projects that you think we may see cool off a bit in the coming years?
Good question. You know, I think Albino and Lavender have definitely cooled down. You know, I think that stuff will continue to cool down a little bit. I mean, the Dreamsicle project in general it's always going to be solid, I feel, just because of, I mean, from any new person getting into the industry, it's such an attractive animal of whether they come down to $1,000 or $500 or whatever the number may be, they'll always be desirable at that point, you know, and it's still a double recessive snake, you know, I mean, even if you had it as a pet or you're going to do it as a breeding project, but, you know, I mean, I would say some of the older recessives are obviously the ones to continue to do, you know, I mean, how the market is on anything, you know, they're going to kind of become something that's not as desirable, period.
Gotcha. And so going back to the sales a little bit, like what sales channels do you think have been like the most productive for you? Is it your website? Is it Morph Market? Is it shows? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I mean, I do a lot on Morph Market. I try to keep anything that I have for sale available, you know, so I always try to keep it listed. There's times to where I get a little bit behind and I'll have stuff on my sheet, you know, of what's available, but not listed on Morph Market. But other than that, I mean, between that and then Instagram and stuff, you know, of just, you know, every time, you know, every now and then, you know, I mean, I'll post a story of this is available or whatnot. But I kind of let the things just kind of flow, you know, and let the animals kind of do their thing. You know, I mean, I feel like I try to put up stuff that's at a good number, you know, it's solid and it's not being aggressive, but enticing, you know, and you know, I mean, you get a 3,000 gram DG girl for a couple grand, you know, I mean, how can you almost make that work, you know? And so I just kind of keep things flowing, you know, I mean, that's probably the hardest thing of doing it, you know, I mean, full time is obviously, you know, I mean, I didn't make a lot, you know, production wise, you know, so I mean, I'm cutting into some girls to keep things rolling, because that's not really it. It's more of I'm slimming down things that I don't need, but also kind of projecting for the future of things that make the most of sense. You know, you don't have, like I said, you don't have to keep 200 animals to make amazing clutches. You know, you can keep 100, you know, so that's kind of my mindset right now.
Gotcha. And are you doing, you're doing shows, right?
I do October and March Tinley, and that's the only two shows I do a year.
Okay. Yeah. Are you thinking about doing any other shows, like some of the other NARBCs or some?
Yeah, I mean, there's a possibility, you know, I mean, my wife and I mean, we've been, you know, house shopping a little bit and browsing around, you know, I mean, there's a good chance I'll probably end up moving from East Coast to West Coast and move out to Arizona. You know, so if I end up doing that, then obviously I'll end up changing things a little bit. You know, I'll still keep my March and October table. You know, at Tinley, 100%, it's like Beverly Hills real estate, man. You know, I mean, that place there, you know, I mean, I've heard so many stories of, you know, other vendors and other very well-known bigger breeders that are struggling to get in there, and like, they'll write a serious check for your 8-foot table. As crazy as it sounds, you know, I mean, it's became very a hot commodity, you know, that I won't give that up. But if I end up doing that, then I end up doing like California, you know, like doing Pomona, and I've been there, but I've never officially vended it myself. The only year I went there was, I want to say it was 18 or 19, and I vended it with Justin to help him out. That year he shipped animals out the whole entire bit, and you know, he vended that show. But other than that, I might do Vegas or something, because it's obviously it's a few hours away from Phoenix, you know, from where I'm at in Arizona. So, you know, I might do some of that kind of stuff. But I mean, my ground floor is October and March Tinley, period.
Gotcha. How long have you been doing Tinley?
This will be March. This coming year will be 4 years.
4 years. And so, was it hard for you to get in at the time? How'd you work your way in there? Because I've heard that too. Like, I heard it's like hardest.
Yeah.
To get into Tinley.
I mean, Justin had a lot of tables. Maybe more tables than he needed. I don't know what the exact virtue was there, but I ended up getting one of his basically, and that was kind of my way in, more or less. You know, I mean, we've got that one whole aisle, you know, between the group, and we try to keep it pretty solid of who's down that row. You know, so it's that was kind of my way I felt in, you know, to get a table at Tinley.
Gotcha. Goes back to that network.
And that's it. You know, I mean, whether you set up there or you don't, you know, just being that show in general is huge from a marketing aspect. You know, I know it's one of the costlier shows from a vendor side of things to put on, you know, or even to attend, you know. A lot of us travel, you know, I mean, a lot of people, as you know, travel to Tinley. You know, I mean, it's probably one of the largest international shows, I'd say, in the U.S., you know, from people coming in from out of the country and stuff to the United States for that show particularly than any other show in the U.S. But it's the Super Bowl, you know, I mean, it really is, especially for ball pythons, as we know. You know, I mean, it's right. Definitely the... It's the Mecca, you know, I mean, it's the cool show to be at, you know, to let alone have a table and set up and the whole bit. I mean, I remember the days of going and attending the show, but not vending. And sometimes I miss those days, you know, because it was so much more fun, because you got to go around and talk to more people. You got to go around and see more things, you know, and you know, having a table, you don't get that privilege as much. You know, I mean, they give us obviously privileged time, I felt, you know, with being able to get in, you know, early on certain mornings and, you know, and that kind of thing. But yeah, it's just a little different, you know, than vending. You always feel obligated, you know, I mean, even on those days of, you know, I mean, because, you know, a lot of vendors sell to vendors, you know, so you get those opportunities of, man, I might have missed the sale if I wasn't there at that time of when all the vendors are walking around, because no one else is being able to walk around, right? VIP or vendors only. So it's just how things work, you know.
And I thought I heard you say one time that you hadn't been to Daytona, at least not at the time. Have you been to Daytona yet?
I have not, still to this day. You know, I mean, that's one show that even when I was into it the first time, like, that was like a Tinley on steroids to me, you know, like I never even did Tinley before. No, I did. I did Tinley, not vending, obviously, but attending the first go around, maybe back in 11 or 12. No, that's one show I still want to do big time, just to attend it. You know, I mean, vending it, I don't think I'll probably do that. You know, I mean, it's I'm really lucky where I'm located in Ohio, because it's literally a 4.5 hour drive to Tinley. You know, I mean, it's nothing, you know, to Daytona, it's a haul,
Yeah.
Obviously living out, if I lived out here, it'd be a lot different because everything, you know, I mean, Daytona and both, you know, are obviously East Coast. I'll probably attend a Daytona here eventually, but vending, I probably won't end up, I don't see it right now.
Gotcha. Yeah. I have a lot of fun at the Daytona show. It's about 2 hours away from me. So that's a show I hit every year. It's a lot of fun though. Definitely a different atmosphere than Tinley. It's like way more spread out. Just kind of like a different layout in general. So it doesn't feel as packed, but it's still like a good bit of people there. And it's just a different vibe. I mean, obviously being on the beach, that's another thing to do too. So it's real cool. Lots of fun had at Daytona for sure.
Yeah, and that's the thing probably there. You know, I mean, the atmosphere is definitely different. You know, the nightlife's definitely different compared to Tinley. You know, I mean, it's different atmosphere for sure. But it's something I'll get to one day. I definitely will. It's just a matter of when.
For sure. All right, bro. So before we let you get out of here and enjoy the rest of your night, I do got some random questions for you. And so the first one is pretty easy one. If you could live anywhere in the world, where would it be and why? Or at least I think it's a fairly easy one.
I've been very lucky in life. So I've traveled the world in a very large way. I guess it just depends on what the other parameters could be. You know, I mean, jobs, et cetera, you know, right? Gotcha. I mean, I love Europe. I mean, I probably couldn't give you a specific exact point, but I would say I would love to live in Europe. You know, I mean, I love England, you know, huge. I mean, Italy's the whole Amalfi Coast, you know, on the water's badass, you know, but I don't really have an exact answer for that because that's like people asking me, you know, like, well, what's your favorite car? It just depends on what you're doing. Like, what are you wanting to do? You know, like, are you wanting to go out and like tear the streets up, or are you wanting to go out and like have like a fun, like cool drive and something that's like old and just the old nostalgia, or you want to go out and set land speed records or try to, right? You know, so same way with that whole thing. You know, I mean, obviously living in a, you know, on the beach in Hawaii or on Monaco or something like that would be epic, right? So
yeah, that would be dope. That would be dope.
That would
so
be
if you were if you're, say it again.
I said, so that would be kind of my answer, I guess you would say, is that that's, you know, I mean, I guess it comes down to your checkbook, you know, more than anything.
If you were trying to set a land speed record, what car would you use?
You know, if you said, here's the salt flats and like you have an open 10 miles, you know, I mean, like, just nothing. The new T50 that Gordon Murray is bringing out is probably one of the, I mean, it's in the new auto, you know, road and track and the whole bit that there's, you know, Motor Trend, the whole bit. They're saying it's basically the new version of a McLaren F1. You know, and from a standpoint at this point in time of where car manufacturing is at with so much hybrid stuff and electric, I mean, it's a naturally aspirated 12-cylinder Cosworth, gated shifting. You know, it's old school technology, but it's new.
Okay.
That is, I mean, they crank almost 13,000 RPM on a road car. They're three seats like a McLaren F1. You know, and I mean, a McLaren F1 realistically is kind of like a 250 GTO Ferrari, you know, to some of the largest enthusiasts in the world. So I would say a T50 would be my first choice.
What's the top speed on it?
Well over two.
Well over two. Yeah, that's fast. That's booking it.
It's getting it.
Nice. All right. So if you won $10 million tomorrow, how would you use it?
I would put my house up for sale in Ohio.
Okay.
And I'd move out here to Arizona and buy a house, pay for it. That's normal. You know, I mean, the biggest thing out here is obviously it's kind of like Beverly Hills to an extent. You know, I mean, Scottsdale's very, very, very expensive. So I would do something that makes sense and have it paid for and have money sitting in the bank to where you can play. You know, I mean, I'll never stop playing with cars. You know, so like buying and playing and flipping, you know, the whole thing with car stuff. I mean, that's never going to change. It just gives me bigger ropes to play with larger items.
For sure. For sure. All right. And so last random question. If you could have dinner with any three people, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
Probably Steve Jobs, I would say, would be one.
Okay.
Very innovative and just, I mean, look at what he's done, you know, in the world. You know, I mean, I ask myself sometimes, you know, how far Apple would be at this point if he was still alive. You know, I mean, the car thing, the whole bit, you know, I mean, you can only imagine, you know, it just seems like Apple streamed so much further when he was here versus obviously not being present. I mean, Elon Musk, you know, I mean, it's some of those types of guys. I mean, their brains are just, they're wired different. You know, I mean, they're just so innovative and so out there from a standpoint of methodical, of, you know, technology to, you know, the way of running a company, you know, like Amazon or anything, you know, so that'd be two. Number three, we'll try to go for something a little bit different. I was lucky enough to meet Carol Shelby, which is who I'm named after, which is who made Shelby Cobras. I mean, probably Enzo Ferrari or something like that. You know, I mean, like I said, cars have been in my blood my whole life. You know, I've been in the Ferrari factory, you know, the whole entire bit that way. So I would say to say you go and eat dinner with Enzo Ferrari, who started Ferrari, would be out of this world cool.
So what's one question you would ask?
Huh?
What's one question you would ask?
I would say, did you ever see Ferrari becoming what it is? But that's a given of no one would, right? So what made you want to do kind of like what you did? You know, I guess is more or less would probably be a good question. You know, I mean, I guess what did you see so early on to make yourself want to develop a car or a motor or anything like that, and let alone see to where it's been today? You know, I mean, it's obviously a huge difference now, but yeah, I mean, that would be really cool to see the, you know, I mean, he didn't dream of any of the technology that's capable of what we're doing now, you know, in cars or anything like that. So, I mean, his mind today would probably be like, blown. You know, how do you generate power out of an F1 car during braking, you know, to the motor, you know, like they do, you know, in Formula One. So it that would be a lot of interesting things. You know, it's kind of Elon Musk territory.
Yeah. Nice, bro. Man, it's been an amazing episode. I'm really glad we got the chance to sit down and kick it, man. Before we wrap up for the night, definitely tell everybody where they can find you.
You know, I mean, you can find me on Instagram. That's probably my biggest thing. You know, I don't do a lot of Facebook, honestly, guys. You know, I mean, that's probably something I should start. You know, I say it in a lot of podcasts. But Facebook is not one of my strongest points, but Instagram is. So Instagram, Morph Market. Say what?
You're not missing much on Facebook.
Oh, well, you know, I mean, the thing is, it's like times have changed. It's kind of like what we were talking about earlier on, you know, I mean, like there's so many different people that are like, more Facebook junkies than Instagram. You know, I guess it depends on your age. You know, I mean, and I, obviously in this industry, there's a lot of difference in age. You know, I mean, you get some 65, 75, you know, or whatever, you know, year old gentlemen that are very heavily invested in the ball python market. You know, I mean, they're Facebook guys more than Instagram guys, obviously, right? So it just depends, but Instagram is my main thing. And my website, you know, it's mershonsmorphs.net. And other than that, Morph Market, you know, definitely feel free to reach out with any questions. You know, I mean, it can be as stupid as, you know, how high you put your outlets in your new facility, you know, off the walls or whatever it wants to be, you know. So give me a shout and you know, I try to take care of everyone.
For sure, man. Again, man, really appreciate it. It's been a great episode. Appreciate everybody who came through tonight, kicked it with us in the chat. Definitely appreciate the replay gang and everyone who's going to check it out on the audio version of the podcast. Appreciate all the support each and every week. Until we see you again, thank y'all for coming out. Be blessed. Peace.